Hello and welcome to South Asia Chat, a podcast series brought to you by the Institute of South Asian Studies at the National University of Singapore. I'm Devyani Chaturvedi, research analyst at ISAS, and I will be your host for today's episode. Earlier this month, the Pakistani Foreign Minister, Mohammad Ishaq Dar, in one of his interactions in London, stated that the Pakistani government is seriously examining resuming trade ties with India. In this episode, we will dwell on the history of the Indo-Pak trade ties, domestic factors playing a role, and critical actors driving the relationship. Joining us today is Professor C. Rajamohan, visiting research professor here at ISAS. Welcome, Prof.
Thank you, Devyani, for inviting me.
Thank you for your time. So my first question to you would be that the recent statement by the Pakistani foreign minister has taken experts from both sides by surprise. Although a subsequent statement by the Pakistani Foreign Ministry revoked this interest, how do you perceive the possibility of this in the future?
Well, I think Mr. Dar's statement in London was a carefully crafted one, but unfortunately, the headline that came through after that generated a whole set of misperceptions, which then the Foreign Office had to clear. What Mr. Shardar said in London is, the traders in Punjab want the trade to be resumed. He said, this is something, you know, we are actually trading with India. He said, we are trading through third parties, for example, through Gulf or Singapore, and that this is expensive. Therefore, it might be sensible to reduce costs and actually trade. But he also was very quick to offer caveats. He said, look, this is not a decision. He was not announcing a decision. He was only saying these common sense logic of doing trade with India. But he also said there are a number of stakeholders who need to be consulted, which means largely the army, as well as a large number of, for example, Imran Khan, the political parties, some of them will oppose if assuming the government decides to trade. So I think the headline got, you know, and the story got ahead of itself. And inevitably, and you had the reaction from Pakistan Foreign Office, which again, what it said was, as of now, there is no change in policy towards India. So they were not ruling it out for future cooperation. So I think what we heard was a political signal, which is not surprising at all, because if you go back to the last few months, Mr. Nawaz Sharif, who was widely presumed to take over as the prime minister, repeatedly said during the campaign, look, Pakistan should have good relations with its neighbors, especially India, Afghanistan, and Iran. India and others have, you know, India has grown fast. India has gone way ahead of Pakistan. So therefore, we need an engagement. We means Pakistan needs an engagement that is practical. And which is focused on generating prosperity for Pakistan. So this is, and he made this statement repeatedly during the election. And it's widely known that Ishaq Dar is very close and is actually related to Mr. Nawaz Sharif, and he served as finance minister before. So coming from him was really signaling the interest of a major section of the Muslim League, led by Nawaz Sharif, to rethink the relationship with India. But it is not a decision that they can take unilaterally. It's a decision that involves a large number of other actors. So I think it is a signal, and how that signal gets followed in the coming years. So neither the first statement nor the presumed contradiction mark the end of the story at this point of time.
Thank you, Dr. Rajamohan. I think the India-Pakistan trade ties have been historically strenuous and actually came to a complete halt after the abrogation of Article 317 in 2019. And you kind of hinted towards this in your previous answer as well, that there are certain other factors that go into this decision or this kind of interest in engagement with India. But if we had to look at it in totality, what do you think are certain factors that are responsible for Pakistan to consider resuming trade and initiating some form of diplomatic engagement? And to what extent do you believe these efforts would receive domestic support?
I think one of the great tragedies of partition was the division of Punjab and Bengal, which were historically a single economic cultural spaces, and the division of these two into as part of two different sovereign entities. Political partition need not have been followed by economic partition. But what happened was both India, Pakistan, and later Bangladesh all initially followed inward-oriented, state-directed, socialist kind of policies where import substitution was considered more important than export promotion. So neither none of these countries were interested in export-led growth. So therefore, the logic of trade as a valuable element of economic prosperity didn't exist. And then to make matters worse, you had actually the securitization of India-Pakistan borders after the 65 and 71 wars, where the borders were no longer zones of trade and cooperation. They became zones of military confrontation. So you had a a cumulative effect of both political development, partition, the economic policy choices that were made, and the consequences of the 65 and 71 wars put trade completely off the agenda between the two countries. The first major change in this comes in the 1990s when India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, by then Bangladesh is an independent country, all of them have to adapt to globalization. All of them had to depart from the state-driven socialist policies to economics of domestic liberalization and globalization. So if you're doing globalization, it made eminent sense to do regionalization as well. So the first talk about regional economic integration, South Asian preferential trade arrangements, regional connectivity, these ideas come to the fore in the 1990s. But translating them into concrete outcomes was very hard. I think I would say, especially for one major reason, I mean, for India and Pakistan, which is Pakistan was on a geopolitical offensive in the 1990s. It thought it had the upper hand on in Kashmir, where India was down and out battling an insurgency at home, international criticism of its human rights policies. So Pakistan in the 90s made it a precondition that progress on Kashmir must precede any political economic cooperation. This resolution of Kashmir to its satisfaction is a precondition for normal relations with India. While Pakistan was opening up towards China, towards Islamic countries, it was not willing to resume any normal economic engagement with India. In between, there were a lot of peace processes, a lot of attempts to start something, but really didn't go very far. Many times we came close to resuming normal MFN trade, because India had always given MFN to Pakistan, but Pakistan had not. But as you said, after 370, India also withdrew the MFN because Pakistan first. No, it was during the earlier terrorist attacks on India. In one of the retaliation, India withdrew MFN, and it was really in the when in the last few years, I would say the story goes back to February 2021, when there was a major breakthrough, you could say, when back channel conversations between General Bajwa, who was the army chief, and the Indian security establishment led by Mr. Ajit Doval, agreed to renew the ceasefire all along the border. And at that point, it was also decided that the ceasefire will be followed by small steps of confidence building measures. That would involve resuming trade in one or two items, open up the land border, resume diplomatic relations at the High Commissioner level. The expectation was that by March, April, we would have seen some steps. In fact, there was even speculation if the steps came, Mr. Modi would actually travel to Pakistan. But unfortunately, none of that happened. And what we had was really Imran Khan opposing trade normalization with India. and things remained in square one. But today, I think, as we said, Nawaz Sharif has always been for trade with India. Zardari and the People's Party have also historically been open to greater trade cooperation with India. And the army was the one which was opposed. So in 21, it was Bajwa, the army, which was supporting some relaxation, but the Imran Khan's hardline on India prevented that. And today, I'm not so sure if the government wants to trade with India, whether PPP under Zardari will actually support it, because Mr. Bilawal Bhutto has echoed very hard sentiments on India. So I think the ball is in Pakistan's court, in a sense that they have to decide, does it make sense for them to trade with India, given the parlous and difficult economic conditions they're in? A common sense would say, yes, trading with India would bring them benefits. It's not that we Indian, as an Indian, I'm saying this, but purely from first principles, which is what Nawaz Sharif is saying. But that common sense, translating that into political sense, is hard, as always, because of the kind of structural tensions within Pakistani politics. And that doesn't mean there are no problems on the Indian side. I mean, India is also saying terrorism must end first before they can negotiate. So my sense is, luckily, there are elections in India that gives a breather in which the two sides could informally talk the question of trade and other issues. And if there's progress in those talks, if a new government takes charge, hopefully the two sides can then look at ways of picking up the threads from the 2021 formula.
Absolutely. I think, as you rightly pointed out as well, I think both sides in 2019 took really strong ideological stances at a national level. And I think in case of Pakistan, that was with regard to statehood and politics in Kashmir, whereas for India, it was about how Pakistan is dealing with terrorism. So I think in that case, a critical question that arises is how Pakistan would then sort of go back on its statement in certain ways and then engage with India in terms of trade. But hypothetically, India and Pakistan do begin to rebuild their trade ties. What would be some of the benefits and how would it impact the India-Pakistan bilateral ties? But at the same time, how would that change geopolitical relations within South Asia? Because this neighborly relationship that India and Pakistan share has always been extremely strenuous and has definitely impeded growth regionally as well. When we look at SAARC or any kind of regional free trade agreement that we had ever imagined. So I would want to sort of know a little bit more about that from you.
Well, first, I think any trade between India and Pakistan would really begin to undo many of the negative consequences of partition, at least on the economic side. We've seen in the eastern subcontinent, thanks to the improvement of India-Bangladesh relationship, we've seen trade volumes grow rapidly between India and Bangladesh. The historic roadways, railways have opened up. River waters have now opened up for trade between the two sides. And there is regional, if you will, connectivity. For example, India can connect to Northeast through Bangladesh. Bangladesh is offering transit. And we're also looking at India, Bangladesh, Nepal, and Bhutan working together. And then we're also looking at trans-regional cooperation, where Eastern subcontinent cooperates with Burma and Thailand. So in a way, the logic of globalization and regionalization is playing out in the Eastern subcontinent to the benefit of everyone involved in this process. But in the Western subcontinent, we've had, because of the Pakistan's emphasis on Kashmir first, that we've not been able to move forward on trade. Now, many parts of the world have similar problems, but many of them say, look, for example, Taiwan and China don't even recognize each other as governments, as legitimate governments. But yet trade between them booms. So you could put your political disputes on the back burner and still do mutually beneficial trade. Now, but the problem is Pakistan is not yet ready for it, because it's taken such a strong position no trade until Kashmir issue is resolved, or at least India takes some major steps to reverse the August 2019 Constitution Amendment. So then I think caught in a bind. I mean, so then the question becomes, is there any face saving that India can give them? Would statehood be enough for them to resume trade? But whatever it is, that if the economic logic prevails, we can see the kind of benefits we are seeing in the eastern subcontinent, in the western subcontinent as well. That is, you can think of India, Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Iran as a coherent geography, that you could think of pipelines, railway lines, transit trade connecting across this region, linking to Central Asia. Many of these ideas have been propounded, but none of them is working because India, Pakistan do not have a good relationship. So I think it can do wonders. I mean, if the two sides can say, look, we'll put aside the political disputes and we'll start working together on trade and cooperation, trade and economic cooperation, it will have huge benefits for the Western subcontinent. Look, I think, as we know, for example, Lahore and Amritsar were really twin cities until the partition of India and Punjab. What were great centers of commerce actually became terminals in the new sovereignties, that together they were actually trading with the entire Asia, inner Asia, with the Gulf. But so so opening up of that border alone would have huge consequences for the regional economy, for the prosperity of Punjab on both sides, besides the sub-regional and regional implications. And if things do move on that front, then I think you have the SAARC, for example. SAARC summits have not taken place since 2014 because of Pakistan says, look, they're not going to sign any connectivity agreements. If the position changes, Prime Minister Modi can then go to SAARC summit, which is due in Islamabad. So any movement, positive movement, can also help resume the SAARC process as well as revive the bilateral engagement. The question is then, what about terrorism, one of the Indian preconditions? Look, I think in Pakistan itself, I think today Pakistan faces terror threat from the TTP, from Baloch liberation organizations. So I think many in Pakistan themselves say that, look, the policy of supporting terror has been disastrous for Pakistan. Therefore, walking back from that policy would actually benefit Pakistan's position in the international and regional communities. So there is a case for that. But here again, a lot would depend, I think, on how strong General Asim Muniru, because policies are finally, India policies finally made by the Pakistan Army, how willing he is to willing to take some risks and incur opposition of Imran Khan and others.
Thank you, Professor Mohan. I think in a lot of detail, you went through all the different challenges as well as benefits that would arise if India and Pakistan initiate trade. Historically, India has always tried to remove the India-Pakistan diaphragm when it came to geopolitical calculations with regard to great power competition. And as that intensifies, how do you feel resuming the India-Pakistan trade ties would come into that calculation, and whether resumption of any kind of diplomatic ties, whether they are just trade ties, would actually impact those kinds of calculations if there is.
No, so I would say, given where the geopolitics is headed, given the US-China rivalry and the India-China conflict, for India, I think any easing of tensions with Pakistan through trade and the stabilization of the relationship would reduce the risks of a two-front confrontation. Because India has already, for example, has moved some troops from Pakistan border to China border since Galwan crisis of 2020. The China border has become far more demanding and challenging for India. Therefore, resumption of trade, confidence-building measures, easing up the tensions on that border would enormously benefit India in terms of how it deals with China. But India is not the only one with a two-front problem. Pakistan has its own two-front problem, which is really In a way, for Pakistan, the India border seems more stable than its border with Afghanistan and Iran. Because you have the TTP attacks, which Pakistan says are coming from Afghan soil. There's continuing tension between Kabul and Islamabad. There were tit-for-tat bombings between Pakistan and Iran on the Baluch border, Baluch frontier that they have. So in some ways for Pakistan too, that to deal with the larger challenges it faces on its western borders, even a pause, we're not talking about friendship and brotherhood, even a tactical pause, for example, from the Pakistani side of stabilizing the India relationship would bring enormous benefits for Pakistan. And the third thing I would say is, given the US-China competition, actually, in a way, India is really drawn closer to the US. While Pakistan is having problems, how does it navigate between China and the US? Who were the best friends of Pakistan? Pakistan benefited enormously as long as US and China were on the same side, but today they're not. So I think for both of us, for India and Pakistan, the normalization of relations would, you know, increase the leverage vis-a-vis the major powers. That in India and Pakistan, I'm not saying a total peace or in love with each other, but that they keep the relationship steady and normal, can improve their bargaining capacity with the major powers, that is US, China, and Russia. And finally, the Gulf countries, especially UAE and Saudi Arabia, which have been historically close to Pakistan, today are much closer to India. But they are willing to invest in Pakistan. They're encouraging an India-Pakistan rapprochement where they can contribute. They have the capital and the money. You don't have to go to New York or Shanghai or Hong Kong to create, you know, bring in resources to transform this border. The Gulf has huge amounts of money. And they're willing to invest if there is a reasonable relationship between India, Pakistan, and there is some kind of a peace for now. So therefore, the Gulf can actually become a major motor of transformation, economic transformation in the subcontinent.
Yes, in fact, I think there have been news written about how Qatar is playing a critical role in sort of facilitating any kind of conversation between India and Pakistan. Are there any extra-regional powers or regional powers that can contribute to this process? If so, how? I think you already pointed out Gulf, but if you could just expand a little bit more on what role they might play, that would be really helpful.
I would say is more than Qatar, it is really the United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia that have really sought to promote India-Pakistan rapprochement. UAE, in fact, was rumored to have helped India-Pakistan resume some talks in the 2021 ceasefire agreement. UAE is also investing in Kashmir. So I think the Gulf, now Pakistan is really looking to the Gulf to generate investments to end its macroeconomic crisis that exists today. So therefore, I would say the Gulf is a natural and logical partner in boosting the economic relationship in an environment of peace. But as far as the you know, Western powers are concerned, today they've stopped treating India-Pakistan as some kind of a, you know, as a pair. That you have to talk about Pakistan if you talk about India. In a way, the dehyphenation of India-Pakistan has taken place. The Western stakes in India have dramatically grown. The volumes of business between India, Europe, and the US have grown. So therefore, they're no longer interested in doing what they were doing in the 90s. Oh my God, India-Pakistan going to, you know, use nuclear weapons. So let's go in and, you know, stabilize the relationship. So in that way, post-Afghanistan, Pakistan has fallen off the radar in a way that it was. As long as American troops were in Afghanistan, Pakistan had huge leverage with the West, and the West had to listen to the demands on India. But today, that part is gone. And as far as India is concerned, China is a party to the conflict because of the Kashmir issue, where China has, you know, Indian dispute in Ladakh. Ladakh is part of Kashmir, so India has never accepted Chinese role. Therefore, I don't see much for the great powers in this role. But I think if India and the South Asia, if India, Pakistan, and the Gulf work together, they can not only produce peace, but they can do something much larger of creating a new economic force. That'd be good for the whole world.
Hypothetically, if there was a timeline when it came to improvement and engagement, when it came to India-Pakistan trade ties, would you have a particular timeline in mind? And as you mentioned, I think earlier in the conversation as well, that there were chances that there would be certain confidence-building measures, including trade talks, by sometime in March and April. And we're currently in that period right before India goes to election and Pakistan has just finished its election process. Do you feel these election processes may change certain negotiations or may impact them in any way?
No, it's not the elections per se. I mean, I think because India is not going to take major decisions during the elections, but I think this period offers space for a quiet diplomacy, not in the public domain, because public domain is not the place where you can do sensitive things. Just as the ceasefire was negotiated in private and in secret, they can negotiate what are the terms of re-engagement between India and Pakistan. So by the time Mr. Modi, like everyone presumes, will win the election and takes charge as a prime minister in mid-June. If by the time there are certain understandings between the two sides, that can be implemented rapidly in the wake of, you know, the formation of a new government after the elections in India. Mr. Modi himself has talked about doing bigger things and bolder things. So they're going to have a lot of political confidence, and they're signaling enormous confidence and political will to do things which were not which were considered not doable some time ago. So I would say so the next 3 months offers a window for quiet negotiations between the Indian establishment and the Pakistani security establishment. So the same channel between Indian security establishment and the Pakistan army that produced ceasefire will have to explore the terms of a new terms for an engagement, because this is not going to be on the basis of 1990s formulas, because the balance of power between the two has changed. India's now 10 times bigger than Pakistan in the economy. So I think but Pakistan will have, this is a hard bit for Pakistan to swallow, but I think that there will have to be fresh terms of engagement, which there must be serious benefit for Pakistan, otherwise they wouldn't engage. Same for India. So what I'm hopeful that this next 3 months will give us an opportunity to rethink the relationship and develop new terms of engagement.
Absolutely. I think on that hopeful note, the recent comments by Pakistani Foreign Minister definitely ignite some hope and actually give insight to a possibly different relationship between India and Pakistan when it comes to its trade ties, which may eventually initiate some kind of confidence even in the diplomatic relations between the two countries. Thank you so much, Professor Mohan, for your time today, and we really, really appreciate it.
Wonderful talking to you.
You were listening to South Asia Chat. To learn more about our work, please visit us at isas.nus.edu.sg. You can also get updates from our social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter.